Hey everyone, this is Made for Music. I am your host, Duncan Byerjohn. The reason I started this podcast was growing up, music was my ultimate passion, but I didn't know how to get started. So this podcast seeks to depict a comprehensive view of the music world, from the artistry to the business, so you can discover the resources available to you, and most importantly, the stories behind the people making things happen. If you dig what you hear, please rate and subscribe to Made for Music on Apple Podcasts or whatever your preferred podcast medium is. I truly appreciate that extra effort, and without further ado, here is the next episode of Made for Music. Welcome to Made for Music. Today's friend of the podcast entered the Northwest music scene by way of Pacific Lutheran University, where he majored in exercise science and minored in music. The man is always on his grind coming through today after back-to-back shows last night. You're bound to run into him at a jam session in the greater SeaTac area. So please welcome a member of Soul Funk Group Weather Experts and founder of the genre-bending jazz quintet 322, the man who will whip your ass into shape over at Olympic Athletic Club in Ballard, Brandon Lee Searley.
How's it going, man?
Good. Thanks for rolling on through.
Thank you.
Yeah. I guess we'll start at the very beginning. Growing up, how did music play into your life?
Yeah, so actually my mom was a flute player growing up, and she actually went to Pacific Lutheran University as well.
Oh, right.
She was one of the top. She was in the top wind ensemble there, and she wanted to be a music teacher at first, but then decided, like, the music program over there, like, to be a music teacher is pretty, it's extensive. And so she knew she wanted to teach, so then she moved just to education. She teaches out in Spanaway at Elk Plains School of Choice, second and third grade. I was in her class when I was growing up. But
oh, how was that?
It was like, I mean, it was good. It was fine. But like, if I ever got in trouble, like, she'd kick my ass.
Yeah, it goes home with you.
Right, exactly. And so, yeah, and like, that was musical. And, you know, my dad was a Marine, and, you know, he was big into like martial arts and like working out and whatnot. And my parents were big into like some Motown and like R&B. I remember there's videos of me like running around the house when like R. Kelly, before, you know, all this right, crazy shit happened with him, but like R. Kelly, like New Edition, all that kind of stuff. So I grew up listening to that kind of music. And then I did start playing the cello in fifth grade, and I hated it. And because we weren't allowed to play in the band until sixth grade. So I was like, yeah, mom, I don't want to play the cello. And so sixth grade comes around, I remember going into the gymnasium, and I was like, I want to play that, you know, because I don't know, none of my family members plays jazz at all. It was just, I just gravitated towards the saxophone just because I think it was probably just the way that it looked.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, from there, just kind of went through, you know, high school playing jazz and whatnot, and college. And so that's kind of where it all began. So
that's awesome, man. And do you think it had to do with like the Motown and the horn sections or anything like that? Or were you cognizant of the fact that saxophones were a part of that sound, or was it just,
yeah, that, you know, sweet? Like, I didn't have anything like crazy. Like some of these people, they're like, yeah, I think I remember listening to like Grover Washington Jr.'s Just the Two of Us and hearing the saxophone in there. And that kind of resonated with me. But yeah, like I said, my parents really never listened to anything crazy, like, you know, instrumental like that. Maybe, you know, if they listened to, you know, like, I remember listening to Cameo, you know, Candy, and then finding out that was Michael Brecker who plays the saxophone solo in that song. But like, it just kind of stood out. So yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's awesome that you stuck with it too, because I feel like a lot of folks, when they get their introduction in like high school or something like that, they do the jazz band as like an extra. My brother is a prime example. Like,
right,
played jazz, enjoyed it, and then they kind of branch off into other things. So what is it about jazz that made you want to stick with it?
Yeah, man. Like, and I totally, and like other avenues too. Like, that's what I do as well, you know, working with other producers, and, you know, but like that foundation of jazz, it's just like, the thing I like about it is you'll never be a master. You'll never master it. There's always something that you're learning, or something that you can take away from, you know, players that are better than you, or, you know, listening to other records and being like, oh wow, like, this is really cool. Like, you know, I know how to play this song, but now I can add some type of element from, you know, what the greats are doing. You know, that's the one thing, the jazz is the taking from the greats and trying to evolve it into your own playing. So I guess for me, that's, and it's always just like, I always feel like I'm always chasing after something, which is what I like doing that. So
mm-hmm. That was one thing that I was really impressed by before, when we were kind of chatting before the podcast and whatnot was you mentioned you're actually still taking lessons as well.
Yeah.
So that's really inspiring, just that you're just pursuing constant learning.
Right.
I guess what would you say to someone who's maybe just getting started in jazz, or what would your advice be to them as far as how to approach learning and where to go to continue learning? Like, what resources are available?
Yeah, like, so, like, even before, like, I really dove into jazz, I started with, like, classical music. Like, a lot of jazz saxophonists or saxophonists in general, like, classical music is a good foundation, too, like, learning that, you know, being a part of different ensembles. You know, I was in, like, you know, quartets, and I was a ninth grader, and I got recruited by the high school saxophone quartet to go play for them, and we made it to state that first year I played with them. But it's like, it's kind of like sports, you know. I played sports too. If you want to elevate your game, and you know, you want to go, like, what's going to separate you from other people, look at it like that for music as well. Like, how do you separate yourself from somebody else? Like, if that's really what you want to do, you'll go seek the help from, you know, like, mentors or whatnot. And so, yeah, I still take lessons from, you know, Tracy Canope. Like, he's been kicking my ass since high school when I've been going to him. And then I take some lessons from Braxton Cook out in New York, and then Danny Janklow in LA, and Steve Tressler in Seattle, actually. Like, it's cool to see that just the different kind of approaches and how they attack it. But at the whole end goal is to be a better player in general. So
you mentioned kind of pulling from all the greats and making your own thing. Does that play into why you have multiple teachers as well? Cause I know when I was growing up, I had one piano teacher, then I switched to one guitar teacher. You've got multiple.
Right. Yeah. Like, and the thing is, sometimes, you know, if you're with one person for so long, it's like, okay, like, I have a gist of that, but let me see somebody else's approach. Like, maybe, you know, one teacher, like Tracy, he's like the bebop era. Like, it's all bebop. But then if you look at, like, you know, Steve Tressler, you know, he's kind of more into, like, playing idea rather than, like, patterns and whatnot, but, like, shapes and, like, using different kind of colors and stuff. So it's kind of just different approaches that, like, you know, if one person will explain it to you, you're like, well, maybe I don't understand it. Let me go to somebody else and see if the way that they explain it helps. And so sometimes I feel like that's how my brain likes to work. Like, you could tell me something, but then maybe, you know, I can go to somebody else and ask them the same concept. They're like, well, think of it like this. Oh, that's what, you know, person A was saying. So it's kind of like that.
Right on. And do you think having all those different influences has enabled you to kind of create these genre bending sounds for something like 3-2-2?
Yeah.
3-2-2, excuse me.
Yeah. So with, like, 3-2-2, the nice thing is, you know, all of us bring in different, like, influences to the group. Like, we all didn't listen to the same music growing up. Like, our bass player, Sean Murphy, he, you know, he used to play with he did some traveling with a contestant on The Voice that was from Tacoma.
Oh, wow.
And so, like, he played bass for that, but, like, he loves, you know, he's like the prog music. He likes Snarky Puppy. So that's what he brings to the group. Our piano player, Josh Van Cleve, you know, he listens to a lot of Brad Meldow, which is, if you've ever heard Brad Meldow play piano, it's insane. Like, the way that he plays is just crazy. And then, you know, for myself, you know, bringing, like, hip hop, R&B, you know, the jazz, I like to incorporate that. And so it's just like, you know, each member just brings a different flavor. And then when we write music, you can tell that those influences play a big part of, you know, the song, depending on who, you know, writes it. So that's the cool thing around, like, with our band is, like, I don't know of any other band that kind of sounds like we do, which is great because, you know, we want to try to sound different.
Right. So what's your approach then to writing with, like, a quintet? Do you have a structured approach, or is it everyone kind of bringing in different ideas and an amalgamation of all that?
Yeah. So, from player to player, like, our guitarists and our keyboardists, you know, they kind of like to just get in the shed and just write whatever comes to their mind. Me, you know, like, I didn't do a lot of composing in college. Like, I did write a couple of the tracks on our first album. And then I'm more of, like, a collaborative writer. You know, I'll bring an idea, or, you know, if I'm practicing, I'm like, oh, cool, I just played something that, you know, okay, cool, let me play it again and record it, and we'll go to rehearsal. I'm like, hey, guys, check this out. Here's what I came up with. And then they're like, oh, cool, maybe this might sound cool over that. And so that, like, that whole, like, organic kind of writing is what I like. And some groups like Kneebody, they do it all the time. Obviously, they're, you know, really good at it. But, I mean, it's that, I don't know, something about the collaborative writing is what I really like.
Yeah, and that's always conducive to a band.
Right.
On the flip side, you do like some EDM. So right. I was curious as to how A, you came into the EDM sphere from jazz, and then how has jazz and these other instrumental acts influenced your approach to something like that?
Yeah, so for the EDM part, so I actually, I just am a feature act for two friends. So they're a big, like, LA DJ group out in, from LA, obviously. And, yeah, my friend, he was, so apparently what they do is they have, just a group of saxophone players that they've played with, like, in different states. And so once you're on with them, then they kind of make a backlog of that. And so I guess they contacted my friend who is from Seattle that I know, and he's out in Louisiana now. And they're like, hey, can you play for Lucky 2018 with us? He's like, well, I'd love to, but I'm in Louisiana. So he gave him my information, and they contacted me, and I was like, yeah, at first I was like, you know, like, EDM is definitely not my scene at all. But, you know, as a musician, like, you know, you never want to turn down a gig, right? You never know what that leads into. And so, yeah, that was like the first, like, that was the biggest crowd I've ever played in front of, so far. We played, like, 322 played at, Northwest Folklife last year, but, like, I was like, cool, you know, I'll play it. It seems cool. And so I get there and I was on stage and I was playing with the guys and you know, we took a picture at the end. You know, it was fine. You know, it was just like another performance for me. But then afterwards, when I looked at the picture, I was like, I just played in front of all those people because it's at the Tacoma Dome. It was sold out that year.
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah, it was crazy. And so I've played like three shows with them since because, you know, I guess they liked how I played. So I played with them at Numo's last year. We took a trip up to Vancouver, Canada. I played with them there, and then we played at Foundation before Foundation got shut down.
Oh.
Yeah, so but that was fun. Yeah, you know, it's just like, you know, and I hit my friend up, was like, yo man, like, thanks for, you know, referring me to play with them. And so, you know, I might be, I'm hoping I get to play with them at Paradiso this year. They're a part of the lineup, so
yeah.
that'll be super fun. So
how do you approach that differently then? Because it's a whole different animal as right. far as EDM. So what does the prep look like for your quintet and then something like an EDM set?
Yeah, so with the EDM set, it's like, it's not super complicated, like, structure-wise. You know, they tell you, okay, this is where, like, the drop happens. You're going to solo for X amount of, you can think of a measure or time until the next part comes in. And the thing about, like, EDM and also with, like, the hip-hop stuff, which, you know, that I do as well, it's you don't want to be super, like, crazy complex when you're playing, like jazz sometimes, you know, you have, like, just putting little statements out here and just kind of riding the vibe is, like, what catches people's attention. Once you start getting too notey and start playing too much, then you're kind of drowning out the music of what they were doing with a certain song, so...
That's super cool, and it's awesome that you've managed to diversify
right.
so much. And has a lot of that been through networking is kind of what it sounds like with two friends, or have you made a conscious decision to try and branch out like that?
Yeah, man. Like, I love tapping into any kind of any type of music outlet, honestly. But, like, networking has definitely been something that I've been doing over the years. Like, for example, like, I'm basically our manager and booker for 322, which is fine because, you know, I started it and I don't find it as like, oh God, I gotta book gigs. No, I find it as like a good learning tool too, because you learn how to, you know, A, talk to other people, network, what works, what doesn't work. And then you start getting that negotiation and then you start building the rapport. And then, you know, you never know who they tell, hey, we had this band, the guy that, you know, Brandon Lee that books, he's a great guy, you should contact them. Boom, there we go. There's another, like, web of networking. And so, yeah, honestly, just networking, like, social media has been big for me as well. Like, just, you know, posting videos of me playing or whatnot. Like, I could care less how many followers I have. At the end of the day, I don't care about that. Like, I just want to share what I've been doing with, you know, friends that I don't get to see as often, or, you know, if anybody, you know, cares to look, great.
Yeah, and it's kind of revolutionized the way we can book too. Right. Have you met a lot of your contacts through social media, or are you kind of doing the email route predominantly?
I would say it's like 50-50, like, started with emails and then social media. I've you know, I've seen places or whatnot, and, you know, some places I've seen friends play, I'm like, oh cool, I'll hit them up on social media. You know, it's 50-50 if they'll get back to you or not. I'm like, hey, yeah, sure, here's our email, send us an email. Cool, all right.
Yeah. And what's your approach then to booking especially with so many different acts, how do you balance it all when you've got multiple projects?
Yeah, going? So for like the music, like the jazz playing side, I predominantly book for 322 just because like we have a bigger following. I do have a trio, but that's more of like, I like to play, like for 322, we try to play all original music, which is that's all we try to do is original music. If we have to throw in like some covers or whatnot, totally fine. But for the trio, it's mostly, you know, we'll play some originals, but it's mostly like jazz standards. This is where I can really just, you know, go back to the root and really play like that kind of music that I love. So like I'll book those for little small gigs, like coffee shop gigs, like smaller intimate events. Like you don't want to have like, you know, our band 322 at kind of like, you know, maybe like a hotel gig or whatnot, you know, something a little more pared down to where like it's more, you know, music in the background that people can mingle to and just, you know, and so that's kind of how I go about that.
Definitely. Continuing on some of the networking vein, how do you connect with like the jazz community here? Because there's certain pockets in Seattle that are kind of right. Like, oh, the singer-songwriters are going to like Connor Byrne Pub and right. Sims Tavern. And so if someone's like, I want to get into the jazz scene, where would you recommend someone starting? How do you go about it?
Yeah, man. Well, one thing too is I like to play like even that's a nice thing about the trio stuff in the cut down pair. Or if we need subs is I like to play with different players. I love playing with my band all the time, but it's like good to, you know, branch out and have other people come and join. And that's what I'll do. I'll hit up any like friends and players out here and then, oh, cool. Like, let's exchange contact information. Or, hey, like, I've listened to your band before. Why don't you double bill over at, like, the Royal Room, which is a great place to start. Like,
yeah.
I've been there so many times, and they've been gracious enough to have me back, like, to host a weekly jam session there. And so it's, like, I would tell anybody that's booking for anything, like, try to branch out and try to contact and play with different people. You know, there's no reason to just kind of stick by yourself and just kind of close yourself out from that, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And you mentioned jams and whatnot. Do you have a couple that you frequent that you'd recommend to folks?
Yeah, I haven't, man. I need to get better at going to jams. It's just sometimes they're late. And then, yeah. You know, with my job right now, you know, I train clients at like 5:30 in the morning. So like playing until like 2 a.m. and waking up. I've done it before. And it sucks. When
yeah.
You know, so it's like, but like the Owl and Thistle is a great one to go to. That's just straight ahead. So like, you know, knowing your standards and doing that. Mo Jams over at Nectar Lounge, that's a great one. I definitely encourage anybody to go play at that jam because the culture there, and I've met some great players there. Like, you know, you had Marshall Hugh on here before, and like I met him, he's a great guy. Like it's all about meeting other musicians, but that one I definitely, you know, it's all improvised. Like you just get up there and play, you know. See, there's a couple in Tacoma. You know, I try to encourage a lot of my Seattle musician friends to go down to Tacoma. Tacoma has a very, like, rich music scene out there as well. Like, I'm hosting a jam with 322 over at the Airport Tavern. Our guitarist, Ian Crocker, he hosts a jam, like, every, like, third Wednesday of the month over at El Tufo in Tacoma. So go check those out. Like, that's the whole part of the music community. Like, go out and, like, play live music and go meet other people. You know, it's better than just, you know, shedding all the time in your room, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And you brought up an interesting point is trying to get people to push outside of the Seattle
right,
boundaries
yeah.
as well. So going to school down south, how did you navigate the greater Tacoma area? How did you break into Seattle and start really expanding those networks?
Yeah, so when I was in college, you know, 322, you know, we were gigging around a lot in Tacoma and I was like, why don't we, you know, expand a little bit? Let's go up. Let's try to move up north a little. So I don't remember where our first gig was in Seattle. I want to say it was probably like the Royal Room or the Musiquarium, the Triple Door Musiquarium. And so, you know, we hit them up and you send them of us playing. Like I said, I've played on KNKX about four times. So when I was in college, they had a School of Jazz segment. So that was our first time playing. And so that was good because we used that as a marketing tool because we were able to say, here's our band. Here's how long we've been playing ABC. Oh, by the way, we played in KNKX live studio session, School of Jazz. Here's the link to that. They checked it out. They liked us. And so they would book us. And so that's kind of how we got the ball rolling. And then, you know, 2017 comes around and I move up to Renton and makes my life easier to book up here because then, you know, I start going out to jam sessions. I start meeting new people, start, And then that's where that whole networking web starts to happen. And so that kind of catapulted into what it has been today.
Very cool. And how do you approach booking differently for like those hotel gigs and stuff where you mentioned you're kind of doing a lot of the jazz standards and whatnot, right, versus like a like venue gig where you're trying to bring in the draw? Right.
Honestly, there's no like crazy difference between the two. The only way that I kind of market like a trio gig from 322 is like, hey, you know, here's a trio, like here's my trio. You know, we're typically like rooted in traditional jazz, but we do put like different takes on it. You know, we're a cut down of, I always tell them we're a cut down of our bigger group, you know, send them some of our music there. And from there, they're like, yeah, it's great. We'd love to have you come down and play with us. And so, yeah, I mean, there's not too big of a difference.
Right on. I guess going off of that, you mentioned kind of going on the radio, and I want to talk a little bit about that, but then also how you guys manage to record. So do you go into the studio, or are you doing DIY? How do you approach all
yeah,
that?
Yeah, so for our first album, Emergence, that's out on all streaming services, we released that actually on my birthday of, I think it was like, I want to say 2016, which was cool. We actually recorded that in the basement of our school in the library.
Nice.
It was, yeah, we totally DIY'd it. Like we had blankets on blankets on the ceiling. Like we had to makeshift, put little like dividers in there. And the funny thing was, so our original bass player and guitarist, our guitarist is going to get his master's over at University of Northern Colorado. And our bass player, he moved to Spokane with his wife. And I've known both of them since ninth grade. And so bass player's dad actually is the drummer in our band.
Oh, no way.
And when we recorded our first album, our current bass player, Sean Murphy, actually recorded, because he went to PLU as well for, he did vocal performance and like tech. And so he actually recorded our first album for us. So it's cool to have him in the band now. And but yeah, so that was the first album. Second album that we just released, November of 2018, 322. We recorded that actually at Studio Litho in Seattle. Dopest studio I've been into. Like Floyd, the engineer, is a great guy. Like the vibe of the whole place, super nice. If any of you guys are, you know, wanting to record an album, I would definitely check that place out. Like, and the history behind it, because I believe that one of the members of Pearl Jam actually still owns the studio.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. So it's super cool. And like when you walk in there, you'll see like the plaques of, I want to say like they had Pearl Jam, they had like Foo Fighters, they had a bunch of plaques, like the people that came and recorded there and won awards for those certain CDs. So it's super cool. So
that's awesome. And do you do, you mentioned setting up like dividers and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So do you do it live room style for your records?
So for the second one, yes. The second one, we weren't like, we were all in one room, and only dividers in the room was between the bass player and then myself. But then the drums and guitar were outside there. Just, I don't know. It gave it a cool vibe. I've done recording in separate rooms. I like that too. I guess it just depends. I leave that up for the professionals, because they know more than I do. So.
Right. Do you do a lot of pre-production, or when you go to record, do you just have the songs mapped out and go to town?
Yeah. So yeah. And that's a nice thing about, you know, our group is like, we try to practice every Sunday, you know, depending on if we have a gig like the weekend, the day before or whatnot. But yeah, we have it all mapped out. We're like, here's the roadmap, basically play start to finish. Everybody knows where we're supposed to come in, the cues, where somebody's soloing. So, you know, time is money when you're in the studio. Yeah. So it's like, you got to have all your ducats in a row and be able to, all right, cool, let's take, boom, one take. All right, let's take another one. Cool, let's move on. And then you just be able to, you know, utilize the time where you need.
So did you all just go in and comp it then? Like, hey, this part of take one, this part of take two, this part of take three, next?
Yeah, so, well, what we did was, I think all of us, it was a long day. So for our second album, like most people, what they do is they'll span it out over a couple of days.
Yeah.
But before, we had to get it recorded, because our bass player was leaving in 2 weeks, and, you know, when you're moving to a different anywhere, you know, you got to have all that stuff together. And then the guitarist, he was gearing up to leave, so we only had one shot at it. So we did like a 12-13 hour day.
Oy.
Yeah. And so but we were like, listen, we're gonna do 2 or 3 takes of each song. And then we did that. And then what our bass player did is he actually did all the post-production. He mixed it, and then we sent it back to Floyd, the engineer from Studio Litho, and then he mastered it. So, you know, we were like, hey, use your best, like, professional ear. You know, he would send us certain takes. He's like, hey, here's one take, you know, that I took from, you know, take 3 and whatever. We're like, eh, don't really like that. Or, yeah, keep it. Save that. Boom. And so it's a lot of work that he did, and we're really appreciative that he did it. So, yeah.
I just started hearing about that comping method.
Yeah.
I've done the records I've done. We've done punch-ins,
yeah,
which for me, I can never get into it as much. So I like, from a playing perspective, I really like the idea of comping.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I've heard that on the engineering side of the house, it's like having to sit there and listen through and splice everything together is a little more cumbersome.
Yeah. I've done the punch-in thing too. I don't know. I just, something about just punching it, I'm not a big fan.
Yeah. I would actually go faster.
Yeah.
If it was comping when right. It's sitting there like, okay, hit these 5 notes. That's what we need. I'm like, can I just do the whole thing and
right,
make
yeah.
it like really seamless instead of like sit here and watch you cut my crappy take into right. one decent
no,
one.
The
like,
same way.
But that's awesome. And that takes a lot of discipline too, because it's a whole different animal playing in the studio.
Right.
So how would you recommend someone prepare for that when they're going into the studio, maybe for the first time or first time doing a live take?
Yeah, honestly, you know, some people call it like the red light syndrome. Is when that red light goes on, like you're kind of like a deer in the headlights. You know, everybody goes through it. Yeah. You know, I went through it on the second album too. I'm like, man, I could have played that a whole lot better. But like for me to prepare, I just kind of, you know, just kind of clear my mind and go in there as, hey, like, you know, you can take as many takes as you need, you know, but just play. Like, you know, just forget about all that other stuff and just play what's on your mind and just go for it. Like, you know, that's about it. That's how I prepare for a studio session.
Did you do pre-pro in the sense of you each had a recording of what you were going to do in advance, or was it strictly practice?
Strictly improvised.
Wow.
And that's all, like, even at shows too, everything. And going back to what we talked about earlier, that's why I love jazz too, is like, you're not going to play the same thing, you know, every night. Like every time you're on the bandstand, it's something different. Whatever happened throughout your day or something during the week or some type of emotion, you know, hits you differently each time you play. And so that's why I love it, is because it's never going to be the same. Like, you're not just going to, all right, well, I just, you know, wrote out this solo that I'm going to just play all the time, which can get, you know, kind of boring. But like, that's the beauty of improvisation, is every time you play, it's going to be different.
Yeah, right on. And so when you practice then, do you still have set structures when you go in? You say, okay, for all intents and purposes, we're going to do these 16 bars here, and then these 8 are going to be the sax solo, et cetera, et cetera. Or live, are you just feeding off each other and handing it off?
Yeah, usually, like, for any songs, like, we have our basic structure, so we, you know, we have the structure of the song. But, like, sometimes for, like, a solo section or whatnot, we'll be like, hey, you know, sometimes on the bandstand, we'll just point, like, hey, you go. Or, you know, if I just played a solo before and I don't want one, you know, you point over to the guitar, hey, go, take it, you know. And then they look and say, perfect, let's go. And then they start playing, or we're like, hey, let's try to trade 4s or something like that. So it's kind of organic in that sense, for the most part, yeah.
Cool. And how much does chemistry play into that?
Man, it plays in a lot. If you play, like, and I'm sure it's, you know, with your group or whatnot, when you play with people for a long time, you know their musical tendencies, you know the way that they play and how you can play off of each other. And that was a nice thing about, you know, 322, is having, you know, playing with Elliot Turner, my guitarist. You know, I've known him since 9th grade, and we've played in bands together since. And same with Josh Bozich and with our first group, Thomas Horn as well. Like, we all have been, we played together in college. And then once, you know, they started going their separate ways, you know, you have to rebuild that kind of chemistry. But it's been with these new guys like Sean Murphy and Ian Crocker and Joel Bozich, who joined, you know, Joel was on the album and he joined a year earlier than the other two. Josh Van Cleve, still the keyboardist, is still in the band. Like, the chemistry has actually been been very good in a short amount of time, which, you know, when that happens, you're like, well, you know, we'll kind of just do our best. But like, it's really good. Like this last studio session we just did was one of the most fun I ever had. And we sounded great. Like it's, I'm very impressed with everybody.
And how do you go about finding folks? I know you've kind of talked a little bit about how you came to meet some of these folks, but when chemistry is so important, mm-hmm. how do you make that decision of, yeah, let's bring this person to the fold, or, you know, maybe hold off?
Yeah. So for me, like I've played with, you know, so when Ian joined the group, he actually goes to UPS, and my saxophone teacher is the teacher over at UPS for the jazz band, and he actually takes lessons from him as well. So I met him through him, and so, you know, I've played gigs with him throughout the years, and he's actually subbed in, like, you know, when our guitarist was still in the band, he subbed in and played with us. So I'm like, okay, cool, like you're next, because and he's a great player. And so he's just playing with other people in different bands, and then, you know, asking, you know, musicians like, hey, like who would you recommend? I'm looking for X person, like, you know, and they'll give you, hey, why don't you try this person out or whatnot? So just, yeah, so that's how I went about like finding like Sean and Ian for the group.
So what's kind of next for y'all? I know you have a lot of content that's coming out. Yeah. And I guess I'll let you speak to it and what's got you most excited.
Yeah, man. Just playing with those guys all the time. Like, you know, we consider 322 like a family, you know, and like a brotherhood. I know it sounds very cliche, but it is the truth. You know, I love playing with those guys, and every time we're on the, like, never seems to amaze me by gig by gig. Like last night, like there's things that happened that I've never, you know, heard from our band do before. And, you know, it just blew me away. And so, I'm looking forward to more gigs that we have coming up. We do have, a gig over at the, Airport Tavern on the 24th. It'll be a 322 set, and then opening up for a jam session. So musicians, bring your horns, come out. It is 21 plus. Sorry guys who are and girls who are under 21, but yeah, I'm looking forward to the summertime. We got a lot of gigs in the summer. I'm really looking forward. I believe it's July 1st. We'll be playing our first show at Barbosa with, Scorpio and the Hunter. So yeah, we're excited for that one, because I've played with the bassist Mo Weisner and Max Walker before, and I got to hear those guys play with that group, and they're a killer group. And so, and they've heard us play as well. And so we're like, we got to do a double bill. So,
yeah.
And then in May, the end of May, we'll be recording a live music video of one of our brand new compositions that our keyboardist wrote. And so we'll be releasing that this summer too. So, and then exploits outside of jazz. I was featured on my buddy Brandon Crumley. He goes by I Love Brandon. He's a Florida producer, big in like to the lo-fi jazz scene. He's releasing an EP and an album, and I'll be featured on two of the songs that are coming out in the album. And I'm telling you guys, it's the song. Oh man, I am so anxious for everybody to hear these, because if you haven't checked out I Love Brandon stuff, man, go follow him on Instagram. Go peep all his music, because it's such a vibe, and I love it. And so I'm so glad that he wanted me to play on these tracks. And so and then we're actually going to do an EP for me this summer. Hopefully I want to release it by like July. So I'm really excited. There's a lot going on, and I'm ready for it.
Yeah, staying busy.
Yeah,
but that's awesome, man. You kind of touched on a little bit, but I see you lighten up about this I Love Brandon stuff. Yeah, do you mind, man, giving a little more insight into what this is, kind of this lo-fi jazz stuff?
Yeah, so he's actually signed with a label, Northwest Soul Academy, that is ran by Farnell Newton. And Farnell Newton is huge in the jazz scene. He started a big face. It started on Facebook, and it has just blown up, called Jam of the Week, where, you know, every week's a different, like, you know, tune or whatever. So like, I think last week was like Herbie Hancock, so other musicians will just be playing Herbie Hancock stuff and posting it and making this big music community. So yeah, I saw his stuff, I Love Brandon stuff, on Instagram. My buddy Machado from Oregon, he's in Oregon now, played on one of his tracks called Earth and Sky on his first project. I was like, yo, this shit is fire. And I was like, and so I posted a video of myself playing over Brandon's beat on Instagram, because I was just like, yo, I need to get on this. So I just played over it, and he loved it, and he hit me up, and I was like, yo, like, my friend Machado was on your track. He's like, oh, no way, you know him. And so we just, you know, started talking up, and then he's like, yo, I have this track, and I would love for you to be on it, called Strawberry Blue. And he sent that to me, and I was like, oh man. And so I knew as soon as he sent me that first track, I know like, okay, we're going to be working for a bit, because man, the stuff like his, the way that he uses, that he produces, it just like, it's such a vibe for me that like I'll listen to those songs like all day.
Yeah, I can't remember if I said it on the podcast or if it was right before, but I was listening to Strawberry Blue the whole time when I was setting all this stuff up, so I can attest to that as well.
Oh, yeah.
That's super. And you have one additional song you said with
him? I got two. I have two. Yeah, and yeah, man, if you follow me on Instagram or Brandon on Instagram, he's posted little snippets because he won't post anything. Like, he won't give you the meat and potatoes of the song, but he'll give you little snippets of it, and people just go crazy. And then, like he said, his DMs are always filled like, yo, when are you guys dropping this? When are you dropping this? And he won't respond to him because he wants to build up that anticipation. And so, the two that I'm on, probably two of my favorite songs.
Right on. That's awesome, man. Before we wrap things up here, I kind of have these rapid fire questions that I put together. It's a get stumped section. So you sent over some of your influences to me beforehand. Yes. So I'm going to give you some options and fire back at me.
All right. So let's do it.
Dexter Gordon or John Coltrane?
Oh, man, you can't do that to me, man. I'm going to go Dexter Gordon, man. Dexter Gordon.
Charlie Parker or Sonny Stitt?
Charlie Parker.
If you were to go into the EDM field, would you want to remix something or write a new track?
Oh, definitely write a new track. I've done that with a Seattle producer friend of mine. We released an EP called 3411/Call Me. You guys should check it out. It's EDM jazz. It's dope.
Right on. Live, would you rather have a 16-bar solo or trade 4-for-4?
16.
Yeah.
I got to have a solo section for myself sometimes.
And if someone comes to you at the gym for personal training, are you going to start them on cardio or weights?
Weights, man. You can do cardio on your own.
Yeah. Right on. Before we get going here, I want to kind of dive into the deeper stuff behind why you do what you do.
Yeah.
So why do you make music?
Man, I make music because, you know, it just gives me that rush of, you know, where are things going to go? Like, each song is different. Like I said earlier, like, every song has different meanings, like, when you write it, you know. So I've written, you know, a track called Vibin' on our first album where, you know, it kind of has a feel of, you know, like I wrote that, I think, driving and hanging out with friends. And so that's the kind of vibe that I wanted it to portray. And then I wrote Chasing the Dream on this last album, you know, and it's got kind of more of a hopeful vibe because, you know, my end goal is to be a professional musician. And, you know, people look at me as an inspiration. Like, am I the greatest saxophone player right now? Not yet. I'm striving to be, you know, everybody's got stuff to work on. But like, you know, that Chasing the Dream really shows, like, I'm chasing my dream to become, you know, a professional musician and, you know, trying to be, you know, somebody in the community that they can look up to and, like, hey, like, if Brandon Lee can do it, I know I can do it, you know. And so just the rush of that and yeah, just trying to be an inspiration to other, you know, musicians coming up, because, you know, I still look up to people today, you know, and I would love for somebody to be like, hey, like, look at what he's doing. You know,
for sure. And what do you think sets your music apart?
I think for me personally, it's just a different, you know, it's a different vibe, different influences. It's not like, you know, just straight ahead jazz. And, you know, we want to see more people coming to gigs. You know, when I feel like the stigma sometimes is you tell people, oh, come out to our show. We play, you know, we play jazz. People kind of just turn off sometimes. And our music is not just jazz. It's jazz, hip hop, soul. It's fun. It has so much more than just jazz. And I think that's what separates us from other groups out here. And so, you know, I'd love to see more people, new people, to come out and support us.
Right on. Have you heard of High Pulp by chance?
High Pulp? No, I haven't.
I should introduce you to Antoine. He's they're like an 8 or 9 piece, very experimental jazz kind of group, but same kind of thing, incorporating a lot of like neo soul and funk and stuff. So afterwards,
yeah,
we should talk about
dope.
It and
yeah.
Use info.
Let's do it.
And so if you were to write and or perform in a different genre, jazz mysteriously disappears off the face of the earth, what would you play?
Man, I would love to be in like the hip hop soul scene, you know, like playing with cats like like Terrace Martin, you know, who does stuff with like Robert Glasper, and love playing with like Robert Glasper. My buddy Braxton Cook plays, you know, he played with a group called Phony People. You should check those guys out. They're dope. And also with like Tom Misch, I would love to play in that kind of genre. I would have loved to be on like a Nipsey Hussle track.
Oh yeah.
You know, rest in peace to him. I would have loved to be on a track with that guy. But yeah, I think I would definitely play in a genre like that.
Totally. Very cool. And I guess lastly, what do you hope people get out of your music?
You know, I hope they get, like, you know, to see the authenticity of how, like, how I play and, like, how I write. You know, it's not like I don't do it, you know, for the, you know, for people to be like, you know, I don't know. I don't do it to get recognized. Like, I'll play in front of 1,000 people or I'll play in front of 2 people. I don't care. Like, as long as you come and you share the musical connection, then I'm, you know, then that's, you know, I'm doing my job. That's what I just love playing music. It, nothing feels like my happiness as much as like music does. And so that's why I'll continue to do it until the day I pass.
Cool, man. Before I let you go here, where can people find you?
Yeah, you can Facebook, Brandon Lee Searley, Instagram @BrandonLee_Searley. If you want to follow 322, it's @322Jazz on Facebook, and then on Instagram it's @322_jazz. So follow us there, you know, for updates on gigs or whatnot, and for my personal page, you know, if you want to see me play some stuff and post pictures with the homies and and the family, then yeah, go ahead and give me a little follow.
Right on, man. Well, thanks so much for coming on through.
Thanks for having me, man.
Best of luck. It was a pleasure to finally get to sit down and chop it up with you. We'll be sure to push all this stuff. Anytime you got shows, be sure to let me know. We'll be pushing it on here. And
sounds great.
Releases, all that stuff. So, cheers, man.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. That was The One by 322 live on the radio. Thanks so much to Brandon Lee for coming on out. His next show is Wednesday, April 24th at the Airport Tavern in Tacoma. 322 will be open up the night with an open mic to follow. The next day, April 25th, he's playing the Aloft Hotel with his trio, the Brandon Lee Searly Trio. Be sure to check him out. And if you dig what you hear, please be sure to go rate Made for Music on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, whatever your preferred listening site is. And be sure to check out Brandon Lee and 322 on social media. Check out Spotify for the soundtrack to this week's episode. Truly appreciate the extra effort. Keep supporting those local musicians out there. And I will see you next time.